Good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a work session on case number RC-15-495, our second work session on this matter. I first want to apologize for taking over the last work session for the portfolio holder. I kind of forgot that I wasn't the portfolio holder of that work session and sort of ran it myself.
Bill Marshall.
Anyway, sorry about that, Brian. I do not intend to do that this session. I'm going to pass this over to Randy in short order. I do not have any opening comments. Do you have any opening comments?
No, Madam Chair. Other than just to reinforce, RC-15-495 is not for Randy Chrisman.
It's for reclamation.
Right. Yes.
So the floor is yours, Randy,
well, I guess
to run this work session.
I didn't prepare anything. I thought you were running everything.
Taking over.
Last work session, staff asked to have some additional evidence brought in the policy manual from OSM and introduced the whole thing. I'm kind of running this by to make sure I'm understanding right. The whole thing has been introduced electronically, and but pages 57 and 58 were the language of importance why it was introduced. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So the whole manual is in evidence now?
Yes.
Okay. So beyond that, we don't need to take any action or do anything in regards to that because it went through the ALJ and Judge Mance has approved it, and so that's all.
Yes, Judge Mance signed an order yesterday.
If I could ask, Randy, maybe Casey could summarize what it is you think that they felt was missing by putting this in there, or what it is that the point that we should be highlighted to, if that makes sense.
And, of course, I can't speak for
your understanding of what you think.
Yeah, advocacy staff. But in just reading through this, it's my understanding that this was admitted to help clarify what negligence is. Obviously, advocacy staff is asserting that there was negligence on the behalf of the company in this event. In my opinion, it appears that there's language on page 57 that says a no negligence situation is where the operator acted prudently, but a violation occurred anyway due to either an act of God or vandalism. And so if I was advocacy staff, I would likely assert that the company did not act prudently, and so that you couldn't find a no negligence situation. However, in reading this document, I think the company could also say that there are things in here that act in their favor as well. Just stepping down to the next paragraph where it says negligence means the failure of a permittee to prevent the occurrence of any violation of his or her permit or any requirement or act of this chapter due to indifference, lack of diligence, or lack of reasonable care. And they could go through and assert, while we weren't indifferent, we don't believe that there was a lack of diligence or that there was a lack of reasonable care. So while advocacy staff has provided this, I'm assuming because they're going to be citing it in their proposed order, it just kind of provides different ways of looking at a finding of negligence.
Well, I'll tell you, one can spend a lot of time, I suppose, arguing whether they should have concerned themselves with matter that was going to be coming from upstream and ultimately deposited somewhere downstream. And had they not concerned themselves with that, then maybe things could have been done differently at this crossing to prevent damage to the island. So whether that was appropriate or not, I sure don't see that that I can say that it was indifferent or that it showed lack of diligence or lack of reasonable care. And so at this point, I'm really struggling with the finding of negligence, to tell you the truth.
Well, I'm not sure if you want us to jump in, so I'll keep jumping in unless you tell me not to. But I agree with that. I don't think the negligence, that's not a road I'm interested in going down at all. I'm still wrapped around the axle back to the question that I asked last week, is that I always like to look at a record and what we can and can't make decisions based on a record. And to me, it's clear, I think, if we wanted to go down the road that basically says, yep, this was definitely a valid NOV, it wasn't negligence, we could draft an order like that and the record would support it pretty clear. I'm not the attorney, okay? But I also don't know if there's enough in there that says that I could vacate this thing. Because back to Guy, when we talked last work session, I said, if there's erosion, do you always issue an NOV? No, I don't. And then you walk through, you know, some of those scenarios. So right there, there's judgment in when an NOV is issued. So is there enough in the record to say that we could vacate this thing because of it was part of an overall plan and blah, 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 blah? We talked about that from what's in there from the permit from stormwater. Or is the record weak on that if it did get appealed?
Before our advisors respond to that, I'm thinking we have kind of a two-part thing here, and I'm looking to them to correct me if I'm wrong about this. But we can have a finding and a penalty, or we can vacate it with or without the negligence finding. So I think early on, to me, kind of the first or, I guess in my mind, the easier step is to determine whether there's negligence or not, and then move on to what I find the more difficult challenge, whether or not there was a violation and whether there should be a penalty or whether it should be vacated.
See, I thought we
I'm trying
the negligence from what Commissioner Fedorchuk said the last work session to what the three of us, I don't think any of us have said that we think there's negligence in any part.
I think it's easier to clear the negligence.
Yeah. So, now we got more evidence.
But if you don't have a fine, then there's clearly no negligence. So if you don't think there's even a violation, then there clearly isn't negligence either. So
correct.
To me, the negligence is the second issue, really. But
sure, I could see it that way too.
There's no negligence if there's no NOV at all. So we have to establish if there's an NOV, if there is a violation first.
Okay, we can go that. I thought it was easier to get the easy one out of the way, but maybe it's not that easy of one, or maybe it just, like you say, automatically is out of the way depending on the determination.
But is there another choice
first,
we're missing here, though, where there is an NOV, yes or no? There is negligence, yes or no? Is there another scenario here that I'm missing?
What to do about the violation, I suppose.
Right, but that's
what penalty?
But that's basically the four paths you could go down.
Okay.
Theoretically, you can find that there is an NOV, that there has been a violation, but based on certain factors that maybe mitigate the situation, you could vacate it. Not to say that you're saying that the event didn't occur specifically or that there wasn't a violation, just that you believe enough information exists to support that finding.
Okay.
Because I'm not saying that I think that there is or isn't an NOV. I'm just trying to clarify if there is enough in the record that could vacate this, if that's a decision way I'd want to go.
Okay. I think it might be helpful. I have pulled a couple previous NOVs that were vacated just to kind of provide some more information as to the premise for them being vacated and just to provide some history precedent that the commission has established. So in RC09 316, and it's important to remember that these are always very fact specific. So you always have to look at a case by case basis because it's always based on the specific facts. There was an instance where an NOV was issued for removal of topsoil, and so they were cited for that. But the removal of this topsoil was due to a miscommunication between members of the company. This is at Falkirk Mine. But this area was later subject to a permit revision. And so the area that where they had removed the topsoil was going to be removed anyway, and the commission later approved this revision. Right after the company realized that they had removed this topsoil, they put it all back and they waited until they had their revision was approved. So in this instance, the NOV was vacated, and there was a number of reasons that the commission found that supported the vacation. That staff had restored the topsoil. The area affected was small. Good cause existed because no harm had occurred to the environment. And then because subsequently a permit was issued that later authorized the same work. So, and just kind of using that, some of those premises, it was because there was no environmental damage. It was just a small area. They took some mitigating measures. And so kind of comparing those to our case, was there environmental harm? What measures did the company take to mitigate this from occurring? Those are all different considerations that can be used. And it's kind of interesting to note that on this order, there was a concurrence by one of the commissioners and then a dissenting opinion as well about the whole process of vacating an NOV. If you are okay, I might read some information I think might be helpful. At this time, former Commissioner Kramer felt that by choosing to carry out the letter of the law, he believed that he would be violating the spirit of the law based on the facts of this specific case. Because it was a small area, they did, you know, remediate it, and then the permit was later approved. However, former Commissioner Tony Clark said that in his opinion, good cause for vacating an order may exist when there are things like uncontrollable circumstances, acts of God, a gray area in the interpretation of rules, or other outside events that might make for a technical violation of the rule, but one in which no reasonable person could suggest it was within the control of the mining company to prevent it. He goes on to say that the specific act was not gross negligence, it was not malicious, but it was a clear violation. Rather than having the commission endorse a standard that a violation is not a violation when we think it is minor, I would offer that the proper place to adjust for matters like seriousness and company remediation is in the penalty phase of the commission's decision-making process. So this certainly is an issue that has been discussed for the certain reasons that we're talking about previously, but just to provide some more background. There was another instance in RC 10598, which involved an incident at Coteau, and it had to do with the mining company failing to install appropriate sediment control. And in that instance, it was vacated. There was a couple days of heavy rainfall. There was sediment that kind of washed up alongside a bank. The violation was vacated because the commission found that there was no evidence was presented by the Reclamation Division to indicate where that source of erosion came from. So obviously a different set of facts, because here we do know where the erosion event took place. But those are, I provide those to you as just examples of what's been used to vacate an order in the past.
Casey, was the RC 10 a 3-0 vote? I cannot remember. I think
RC 10 59. Yeah. I'm sorry. One moment, please. Why?
I think it was because I remember that hearing pretty well.
Yes, it was.
Then the no harm standard, did we apply that in RC 10598 the same way we did in 09316? I can't. Do you recall
the no harm to the?
Yeah, the findings in RC 09316 restored the topsoil. The permit eventually authorized that there was no harm done. There was harm done in 10. Did we talk about that at all? But it was because it was something that couldn't be proven exactly. And
that was the basis why it was vacated, because it couldn't be proven.
Because we couldn't, beyond a reasonable doubt, prove exactly where the source was.
By preponderance of the evidence. And so that's a different standard, too. And so that's where you have to remember that, you know, if the evidence weighs slightly more, so you want to say like 51% in favor of there being a violation, that's the standard.
Thank you.
Yes. And so I know you had asked last time, Commissioner Kolk, that we kind of look through the record and see if there is any mention of using, you know, natural vegetation as a source to mitigate erosion. The only instances where I can find it specifically, and just remembering from what Coyote Creek had testified to, is that, and as advisory staff had said as well, the companies aren't required to give us a breakdown of specific measures that they're going to use, but they are, you know, held to the standard of using the best management practices. So the only information I could really find is within the exhibits that they submitted. So I'll be referencing Exhibit 4 from Coyote Creek, and this is the North Dakota Pollutant Discharge Elimination System General Permit, which is a mouthful. And then Exhibit 9, which is the Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan. And in going over some of this information with advisory staff guy sitting next to me, you know, my question was, because this talks in very generals. So, for example, in the stormwater prevention plan on page 3, I'm just going to read this short little blurb here. It says, because vegetation is a highly effective means to control erosion, efforts will be made to delay disturbance of vegetation for topsoil and subsoil salvage until necessary for construction. This minimizes the period of time that exists between disturbance of existing vegetation and armoring or revegetation activities that are conducted when construction is complete, which is when an area is especially susceptible to erosion. So here they do reference vegetation. My question was, well, where is this being directed at specifically? Is this the whole area? Is this the whole construction road? Is this specifically, you know, to this site? And so just in talking with advisory staff, in his opinion, it's just very general. And so this, you know, this could be used to say that, you know, the company did have intentions of using vegetation when they felt necessary to prevent erosion. Or you could argue that this is very general and site-wide and doesn't necessarily apply to the circumstances given in this instance.
So for Guy and Francisco, when, and I know you weren't the ones that did the NOV, you're our staff, but how do you reconcile those two statements? You come on something that's clearly erosion. How do you know you just issued the NOV? How do you know if it was large part of a larger plan until there is a hearing? How would the inspector know that? They don't have that. They come out, they see it. It's a heavy erosion. So you do your job, they do their job and issue the NOV, but they wouldn't have access to knowing if it was part of a larger plan. Or am I seeing that wrong?
Typically, we don't write violations on site. Typically, we'll gather evidence, come back to the office, look at the permit, talk with others, and try to fully understand the issue that we ran into before we write a violation. But one of the important things at the time you see what you think might be a violation is what did the company do and what kind of preventive measures were in place to prevent what had occurred. Did they take reasonable measures that you would expect?
I understand that, but you wouldn't have access, the way I understand it, if their larger plan was we're going to sacrifice this piece of dirt to protect the larger system. You wouldn't have access to that when you write the NOV because they don't have to file it with you. That's what I think I'm understanding.
And I think it breaks down to the point is, where does that duty exist? It seems like in your comment, you're saying that duty just exists on a larger basis. And
duty exists to do what?
To mitigate erosion. Erosion is going to occur, like I said, during the last work session. It's just a natural occurrence, and you can't prevent it in every instance from happening. But that duty exists site-wide. So
in no circumstance could you sacrifice a piece of ground to, which you know is going to have erosion on it, to benefit the whole site. There's no scenario that can.
I think you certainly could, and that may be justified in some instances, but technically I think you would still have a violation, and then that's where you come in and you feel that you have other factors that justify vacating. Because, I mean, technically, your question is, did the violation occur? And I think, which is interesting, which is kind of goes to the comments in Commissioner Clark's dissent, is, and it's just one way of looking at it. But, you know, NOVs are issued for violations. And so whether or not that violate, basically in your comment, Commissioner Kolk, am I getting it right to where you're saying that it's justified to where it wouldn't constitute an NOV?
I'm just trying to understand your question, but I think if an inspector comes out and sees that there's erosion, do you have the ability to say, okay, it's part of a larger plan to protect the site? And you wouldn't know that because they don't have to tell you that plan. That's what I'm trying to understand. But maybe it's just cut and dry is what you're saying, if there's erosion, there's erosion. Maybe you guys can help if I'm not explaining it right.
Well, I thought we heard at our last meeting that it was clarified that it's not ever an appropriate part of a plan to sacrifice subsoil and topsoil.
And that's exactly what Guy said the last time, but I wanted to go back and to say, but does, from your viewpoint, it's never appropriate. But from these other agencies that say a larger plan can be to use vegetation, how do you reconcile those two statements? And you're saying there's nothing in your area that can give you flexibility to allow that to happen, no matter what the health department says or no matter what these other permits say? So you got two federal agencies giving you different guidance as a land company.
Well,
giving you different ability.
I think I'm hearing
four conversations.
Two different answers to the same question or maybe different questions. But my understanding is, yeah, it's not all right to just sacrifice an area and let it erode. But I would think if you make what you consider a best management practice, in this case, the Houston Engineer Guide still considers it a best management practice to leave that vegetation because it protects for another event, although in the, was it 1 in 10 or 1 or 20, I can't remember what he said, chance of this type of rain event from this direction, it could cause a problem, then I don't know. I don't think that's just sacrificing something. When we say sacrificing, it's almost like, well, we're just writing it off, just pushing it down the creek. I think in this case it was part of a weighing of options of which limits the amount of erosion the most.
What I'm trying to understand is that can an inspector come out there and see clearly erosion but make the decision to not issue an NOV because they understand it's part of a larger plan? I mean, if the commission gets that way in a hearing, we could get that way in an order probably. But as inspector, you have to do it, is what Julie just reminded me. You guys are both in agreement that the inspector has no choice. Even if it is part of a larger plan, you've got to issue that NOV if you have that amount of irrigation or erosion.
There's no waiver on the loss of topsoil.
But topsoil loses. You guys admitted earlier, though, you sometimes don't issue NOVs if there's some topsoil lost.
Provided there was measures in place to try to protect it.
You're saying from your viewpoint you have no choice to do it. Got it. And that goes back to, is there the record to do the other way, say it's part of a larger plan? And that's the decision point.
I think that's where we come in.
But I was
trying to flesh out have their job to do based on the information available, and we then have a hearing and evaluate to see whether there's other information that changes or mitigates that.
What I wanted to flesh out is an inspector can't make that decision on the ground. If they see that amount of irrigation, even if it is part of a larger plan, they have no choice but to issue the NOV, is what I think I just understood.
I hope they have a little bit of flexibility, but I sure don't think that I'll restate it and agree to what I'm saying. That you know, I don't think that if an inspector goes out and issues an NOV, and then in the hearing process, the commission ends up getting more or other or conflicting information and decides to vacate that NOV, I sure don't think that that means the inspector was wrong or out of line by issuing that NOV. It just means that we had our whole hearing process and gathered information and heard differing opinions. And
we have access to more information than the inspection team had, so we would come to a different outcome, potentially. Or the same. If we do come to a different outcome, it's based on different information. We're not looking at the same set of facts.
That's how I view it, and if that's incorrect, then I don't know why the hearing process exists. If that's incorrect, then an issuance of an NOV is an automatic done deal.
Well, this
so I'm kind of jumping subjects, but just partially. You researched some history of commission decisions, and I watch other regulatory agencies within the state, and I don't know if there is precedent for this here, or if we would somehow be precluded. But do we have an option of doing like I see some other agencies do sometimes, of issuing a violation, but suspending the penalty for some time period, and if there are no other violations, or you know, sometimes it's a case where a corrective action is taken that's included in the finding, that then at some period of time it just be vacated.
The NDIC does use that quite often. In this instance, the only issue that I see is that corrective action has appeared to already taken place. So that's just an important consideration.
I'm thinking in this case, the action would be more along the lines of, you know, in the next 9 months or a year, much of this road work has taken place. The box culverts are in. Mm-hmm. We go through another spring thaw phase and have a water event. And if they've got everything correct, would there be precedent, or is this?
As far as I know, I haven't seen anything in the Reclamation Division where that's occurred, but that's not to say that I've been looking specifically for instances like that. I can't speak to an instance. I'm aware when that's been done. That's not to say that I don't think it could be done. That may also be appropriate for advocacy staff and the company to maybe come to some mutual terms, to an agreement, to some type of consent order between the two of them, where that is a provision of the consent order, which can happen up until the time that a final order is issued by the commission, which would be on the 26th. So it can be done through that way, or it could be included in the commission's final order. And I think it's just important that if you're going to do something like that, just as if you would vacate an order, you still have a showing of good cause why you're doing that. Because with doing that, you would be setting precedent for the future. And so what efforts are you trying to promote in doing something like that is really what you have to question and be able to show, I think, to support something like that, just because you are now, you would be setting a precedent that we do kind of, you know, we will suspend or vacate NOVs for periods of, you know, compliance. And so just showing that you believe that there's justification for doing that, I think would be warranted.
Yeah. What would be your thoughts? So you'd be basically saying you did do it, that there was a violation, but there's no penalty for that violation.
Well, my thought, and I don't know, this isn't fixed in my mind, but it's why I asked the question. I mean, clearly there's a significant event happened here with the loss of that topsoil and subsoil off that island. And so to just completely vacate this and like nothing happened, I have some trouble with that. Now, whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision, I guess I never got clear evidence of that satisfied it in my mind, but they made a decision to concern themselves with the erosion that was going to take place from upstream, but on the mine site, not caused by them, but on the mine site, and significant amounts of soil that, if not contained, would be spread downstream. And that's something that we don't want for our environment, is to have all this material spread throughout the stream bed. And so, rightly or wrongly, they took actions that tried to do all things, and we got the significant rain event, and it happened. But I think by doing the finding, or whatever the correct term is here, we acknowledge that there was this event, and it shouldn't have happened, and there was this loss of topsoil and subsoil. But if that were a suspended penalty and were vacated in, I'm not sure the time frame in my mind, but for conversation, let's say a year, based on there being no further incidences along this creek, I think it would be an acknowledgement of the quick corrective action that they took and of doing a good job, because this is a significant work effort, building this haul road across and working on this along this creek during this first year. And if we can get through next year without another event, I think that'll be an important development for this new mine.
I think you just made the case for getting rid of the negligence, because that seems to me, that's where I'm headed and have been. There was a violation. It's obvious in those pictures. We can almost measure how much topsoil and subsoil was lost. But to say that they were indifferent, there was lack of diligence or lack of reasonable care, I just don't think that's true, based on the fact that they did take a number of steps knowing that this event was going to happen, to prepare for it, including calling our office and saying, we expect this big amount of water to come, and we're taking X, Y, and Z steps. And, they still had some significant erosion occur, but I don't think it's out of negligence. So that's where I think the most fair approach to this is to acknowledge that there is a violation of their requirement to mitigate the erosion of topsoil and subsoil, but it wasn't out of negligence. They tried to and had a plan for doing it. It just, failed in some respects. I'm not comfortable with a violation and suspending the fine. Either there was, I'd rather vacate it entirely than say there's a violation, but we're looking the other way and not penalizing you. I just don't agree with that approach.
The components of the fine, again, what were they? What were the numbers we recommended? That was recommended?
There was for history of violations, and so staff had recommended zero. Seriousness of the violation, that was $1,500. There was negligence, a negligence component, and that was also valued at $1,500. And then there's kind of like a good faith allowance that can be given in certain situations, and advocacy staff did not find a good faith allowance. So the total proposed penalty was for $3,000.
So if the commission went to the negligence, that would automatically zero that out, I would assume.
Yes.
And then we're trying to say we think there was good faith. So do you add some good faith? I'm just trying to think how you because your point, Randy, about suspending the money, I kind of agree with Julie on the point. Either we vacate it or we don't. To suspend the money, I don't know what that really does.
Well, I'll tell you, this isn't based on evidence presented to us, but to my logic, and you can put whatever weight you want on that. the company brings in an expert witness from Fargo. They've got a whole crew of people here presenting evidence and testifying. A lot of work preparing a case. That wasn't over $3,000. It was over having the NOV on their record, I think is a far bigger thing than the fine. And there's a lot of work that can be done to prevent erosion on this creek in the coming months before spring runoff, especially in the coming few months before freeze up. And if there were a suspended NOV, regardless what the fine number is, whether it's $1,000 or $1,500 or $2,000, or assuming this $1,500 range, if there's a suspended NOV hanging over them, I think it provides a lot of enticement for them to want to make sure that next year there's no violations of an erosion effect on this creek. And that, to me, is the bottom line of what we're trying to do here, is make sure that we prevent these things.
Can we legally suspend an NOV?
I don't know. These other agencies do it.
Well, but they're...
Isn't that what our history of violations is already intended to do, provide that incentive? So they, you know, if they don't get another NOV, they start from zero again.
Maybe as one's here long enough, maybe all these cases that end up in hearing are fuzzy like this. But, you know, in this case, I guess the reason I'm not more inclined to want to just go ahead and assess it and have it be permanent and forever is because of the recognition that they, you know, caught all that material that was coming from upstream.
Tell me again, though, why you wouldn't just want to vacate it now, then?
That was going to be my clarification point.
What would
extra incentive for them to take extra precautions through these coming months to prevent anything next spring?
I think they would do that anyway because they would have one. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but hopefully they don't have to be incentivized to do more to do what's right. I don't know. I think it's either an NOV now or it's not an NOV. Because if you got an appeal on something like that, how would you even show rationale of why we did something like that?
I think it would have to be like the same premise for the justification used for vacating order. You have to show that there's good cause.
And why not do it now? What we're going to do in 6 months, you do now or not do it.
Well, like I said, I just think it's an extra incentive. And it's for the next year, it's an acknowledgement that while they did do something well in catching the extra erosion coming from upstream, at the end of the day, they didn't maybe technically do it. It didn't work as well as they had hoped, and that there was a problem, too.
I don't know. I'm willing to think about it a little, but I just feel that there's a process in the fining period of this. Either there is or there isn't an NOV, and then there's these categories that are designed to provide the types of incentives and the flexibility to recognize some of the extenuating circumstances that exist on all of these issues. So I'm thinking about the Industrial Commission's practice. It's not something I have felt was a really effective regulatory tool to say that there is a violation, but then you suspend the fine. So I don't think that that's good follow through for enforcing regulations.
I like the
idea of they sometimes reduce the fine for good faith, but that's already in here. We've already got that. We've already implemented that. It's a different way, but it's included in our approach. You know, the history is considered, the seriousness is considered, negligence is considered, and good faith. Now, maybe we could explore on the seriousness of the violation. There's some key terms in here: extent, duration, and impact to public environment. I don't know how those are weighed for reaching up to the $1,500 fine. I don't know the extent or the duration. Well, I know the extent, but I don't know the duration of this violation. And I might have just missed that in the hearing. Well, how long did this last? So to get at the duration or the impact to the public or environment, the impact is this amount of topsoil significant, small? What is the impact?
The flood event came downstream. It ran through this culvert, caused the erosion, over several days before it subsided. So, if that's part of the duration you're asking, I guess, the size and extent as laid out, it was, an erosion hole approximately 15 to 20 feet wide, 15 to 20 feet deep, or 15 to 20 feet square, essentially, and 10 feet deep. So, in addition to the topsoil and subsoil, I guess when you talk erosion, something we can't overlook is the sediment that was eroded away that went downstream from this is also a big part of, obviously was part of the the thought process for this violation. I mean, that's a big hole.
Well, and then the good faith, how long did it take them to get in there and abate the violation? Is that in the evidence someplace? How long
before I believe
everything was corrected?
I believe it was corrected prior to being contacted by the commission. Am I stating that correct? It was
very, very quick.
It was very quickly after the event occurred. Specifically, I just don't have that in front of me at the moment.
Well, I think in the original order, we make note of the good faith, and I'm not reading the whole thing, but just summarizing it, that no deduction can be made for normal compliance, and Coyote Creek did stabilize the area and remove the remaining soil and other earthen materials located opposite the culvert soon after the NOV was issued. However, this was considered normal compliance. Therefore, no deduction for good faith is warranted. That's from Reclamation staff.
I have that, but I don't know how many days that is. I might have a different... Sounds like that's sort of in their own judgment what normal compliance would be, and we might see a two-day response as being, you know, extraordinary.
Julie, if you don't mind me just asking you a direct question, the same way I asked Randy a direct question. So you don't feel that, and I'm not saying I disagree with you, I'm just trying to glad,
sure.
You don't feel that there's any scenario where this was part of a larger plan to reduce irrigate, to reduce impact throughout the system, just the letter of the law says there's damage, so there's an NOV. And that's what was Tony's position.
I appreciate the larger plan. I do appreciate the larger plan and what it did, but it basically collected, from my understanding, it collected topsoil from a different site, off-site, that they didn't even cause. So that was sort of like an extra benefit. But it isn't what their plans are supposed to be designed to do. They're supposed to design plans to control their own workspace and their own erosion. And so it's just hard for me to overlook that photo with that giant this.
Oh no, there's a huge, I was thinking
that's the hard part for me.
There's no question that I agree with you, that's a big hole in the ground. And the when they made the decision to change the outflow of the culvert, that's the part that I haven't brought out, I guess, in our discussion, but at one point they were going to move the culvert to a different point, and then they looked at it and said we need to change that culvert outlet to be somewhere closer to where we'll have the long-term plan to protect the offshore. And so they knew that if they have a big rain event, they were going to take out that island. They knew that. But they were gambling there wasn't going to be a big rain event. So what they did was they made a decision to use the word sacrifice, that's a bad word. They made a decision to pick an area that they knew was going to be removed to another area, from another area. So they made a conscious decision to change their plan.
Was that... I guess I'm not convinced that was because they felt that
better
maintain that that sediment that was coming from upstream.
Agreed.
Or if it was because in the long term, this is where that needs to go.
Right.
That's where it needs to drain, and it does make sense in the long term. It just had a weakness in a serious rain event that they, you know.
Well, that's where the company still never produced that something that said that this is our plan. So, okay.
Although the part of the plan that to keep the island there for some additional time and use it as the middle of the cofferdam, they did go into.
Mm-hmm. I think all of it worked quite well. And would have worked fine if they didn't have so much rain. But with a high rain event, they should have, you know, done something to mitigate that erosion right across the bank that was coming from that culvert. And in their stormwater plans, you know, they do talk about using, you know, in cases of long slope susceptible to significant sheet flow, high velocity or concentrated flow, CCMC may use various products or combinations of products to minimize erosions, including blankets, engineering fabric, articulated concrete mats and wrap. So that is in their plan that they'll do that. They just didn't in this case.
No, your logic is solid. I'm just questioning.
No, in a slightly smaller water event, had they left the culvert more straight and not abutting that island and let the water flow through more quickly, a slightly smaller event, this process, the vegetation may have held it, and so there wouldn't have been erosion on the downstream side of the culvert, and this would have saved the soil from upstream from going through. So then it would be maybe kind of an unrecognized heroic effort, but because the event got this strong, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm. I was going to look for those maps.
That was my question back to you, Randy, is that to me, we either vacate it now or we don't. I don't see a way to suspend vacating. I just don't see how that, if the benefit is to make them do more compliance, they better be doing their job all along. If you think it should be vacated, let's vacate it. If you don't think so, then we don't.
I'm just in favor of acknowledging that something happened here. It didn't work right. I don't want to say that this worked perfectly, because it didn't. But I sure don't think it was negligent. In fact, I think it, based on the Houston engineering expert witness, I think it was probably a pretty good plan. But it didn't work perfectly. So I hate to vacate this completely and act like everything was perfect. I really feel at this point most comfortable issuing the violation.
Okay.
But like I say, vacating it in a year if things have been done well in recognition of the fact that this is an odd circumstance.
Well, I'm not against that. I just don't think that I'm not an attorney. It just doesn't.
That's a totally new way of doing stuff here then.
But what would be the rationale of when it gets vacated from a year, what would be the rationale that we vacated a year from now? Just as a number.
The fact that the initial rationale that it's an odd circumstance, they were concerning themselves with what, based on the pictures, looks like is some pretty obvious upstream erosion that's coming that way and not wanting that to flow down into the rest of the stream bed. So that would be the reason to vacate it. The year part of the question, it gets us through another, what's our normal high water time? I mean, this was late June, which is kind of odd. Most of their high water times are going to be spring runoff. It gets us through another one and really proves that this big initial part of this whole mine plan where they're building the haul road across this creek and getting everything ready has worked pretty well if it works for a year.
There's just one thing I would like to bring up in reference to this that I'm just kind of thinking about. I know OSM kind of approves our processes and has kind of guided the division in the way that these are kind of, you know, in the process of an OV being drafted, issued, and then just through the hearing process. It's just coming to me. I would be curious if there would be some issue possibly with that. I mean, I don't know if we have that answer. That's something that we may have to discuss with Jim. But just from talking with a guy just back and forth right now, apparently there is some national database. There is a database, and so violations get inputted into this database, and so they're either marked as a violation or they're not. And from talking with staff, that may provide or pose some difficulties.
Do any of them that ever end up on there as violations disappear after some time when they've?
I wouldn't know that directly, but
I don't know the answer to that.
Who would we contact to find out to get clarity on that?
I would have to consult with Jim on that. Commissioner Fedorchuk, I did find those dates. If you would like to have those. The inspection was on June 30th. The NOV was issued the 7th, and then removal of the island and downsizing of the cofferdam occurred on July 8th.
you know, that to me suggests good faith is warranted. That's a day after the NOV. So I guess I would propose $500 or, I mean, I'd be open to more, $500 or $1,000 for good faith in eliminating or mitigating it as soon as possible. The shortest possible time is what the wording on this is. And how is there a scenario where it could have been shorter? I mean, is a day? Could it be less than a day after getting an NOV that you'd have it fixed?
I don't know how you do it faster.
Okay.
The advocate, I always get this confused even after however many years it's been. The advocacy staff is laid out in order, correct? So everybody else is defunct commission advisor. So Jim's a commission advisor, correct?
Jim. In this instance, Jim is actually on advocacy staff.
So even though he wasn't at the hearing because he was out doing other work, so then you can't talk to him.
Well, I mean, that would be, it wouldn't be, it would be general questions regarding the overarching process.
I don't even know if that gets in the gray area. It's a weird scenario right now. I'll let you figure that out. But what I was trying to get to is if it wasn't clear, he'd be a commission advisor. We can get him up here right now. But you're saying
he cannot. It would have to be a separate conversation, just in generalities about how that process works.
Name him as advocacy staff.
That's correct. Yes.
Be careful, right?
Yes.
You can talk to him. We can't.
Well, that's not exactly true. So let me just clarify.
That's why I wanted to get that clarified, that you're not going to sit down with Mr. Deutsch. If let our guys go do whatever they do, Francisco and Guy, and they'll consult with whoever they got to consult with, and then we'll get this together again.
Right. We keep the issues very separated, so it wouldn't be conferring with him, you know, on a personal basis about matters that are pertaining to this. If there were questions about general processes of the department, that's a different issue.
That's the case with Guy and Francisco, too. They can't go.
Right, but they could talk to OSM or somebody else.
Right.
For the inspectors, guys, I think that if we would somehow, let's say we could suspend this thing or do something for a year, doesn't that put our inspectors in this god-awful, unfortunate spot that they know there's something hanging over their head, too, and they have made a decision, but they're not, they don't know what quite the result of that decision is, and it gets vacated, but not really knowing why. And then they're out there every day looking at it. It seems like, and I used to be an inspector in a former life too, it seemed like you don't want to put your inspectors in these spots, and we could be putting our inspectors in a tough spot by not making a decision on this.
Yes.
So which part of that? Putting them in a tough spot, right?
Yes.
They want to know what our decision is on this. Francisco, you have said a lot today, so not too much now.
I agree.
Well, no more verbose ideas and just you agree. All
right. Just and kind of just reiterating, I mean, if generally you find that there's, you know, sufficient information to justify hypothetically suspending a violation in theory, then you may have enough justification and, you know, good cause to then just vacate.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just thinking if we did, let's say we suspend it, and then somebody appeals that, then what is our basis of why we suspended it? Because we want them to do a better job?
I'm trying to think through that currently, and I mean, it does muddy the waters a little bit. I mean, it's never happened, so I couldn't say exactly how that would occur, but.
I'll let the oil holder mold us over that. I don't think we have to decide anything today, but. It
may be important to note, too, that this may be, you know, held on pause until we receive the proposed orders from advocacy staff and from the company. They are submitting those on the 18th. So given that you've stated how you feel and kind of seeing where they take the information that they have based off of these sessions and seeing what we get at that time, we could always schedule a work session after we've received those.
So on the filing of those, what does the 18th mean by midnight on the 18th, or you know, because it makes 3 days difference to us. If we get them at a reasonable time on Friday, we can be working with them all weekend.
Just from personally submitting them, I mean, I know my personal deadline has been by 5 p.m. Unless there's a different one, then this would totally be for procedural purposes, looking over to Mr. Biela and Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco on what they historically do. I would assume it's usually by 5 p.m. because then that way the ALJ can actually receive them and notice that it's been marked, because otherwise technically it hasn't been received by the end of the business day.
I'm just going to say that it would sure be nice for a non-lawyer to receive them early enough in the day, since it happens to be a Friday, that if I had some legal technical questions, I'd have time to call you at a reasonable hour, mm-hmm. and then still think about this over the weekend and have a couple more days of contact.
Well, we can definitely suggest and ask very kindly that they be received prior to that. I know that both parties are slightly up against some previous deadlines with some other cases, so just being realistic, I don't know. But I don't anticipate getting them early, just to be very honest. And then just even with what happened as a result of last week's work session and talking with Judge Mann, it appears on Fridays he is short-staffed. There's just, you know, and that happens quite frequently. So even if he does receive them later in the afternoon, I don't know his ability to get them distributed. Oh, we get them here, but they also get sent to him as well. So
on September 28th is when this is a final order is due, right? September 28th is what I have.
Is that the Monday?
Written down.
And that was my
pulling out
question.
My calendar.
Did we ever schedule that hearing? We have one scheduled for something else, but I don't know if we've ever actually scheduled it for this.
Well, we have it on the calendar. We have a hearing scheduled.
Special
for
meeting.
A special commission meeting for
September
this
28th at 11 o'clock.
It isn't for this.
Yeah, we have one for a telecom issue, but I don't know that any of us have ever actually put this on the
agenda
yet.
So,
and I can
add that. 11 o'clock on the 28th.
And I'm sorry, 11 o'clock is the prior one that's scheduled? Or
okay. Scheduled that day. I don't know that this is that meets the deadline. I have it written down on my stuff, so it makes me think that it does meet this deadline, but I'm not sure what the deadline is for this.
I think you figured that out last time and that it did.
And I'm sorry, what are we specifically talking about? Providing notice of the...
No, whether the 28th meets our deadline for issuing an order.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And so we have a meeting scheduled. It's just a matter of... I'll add this to the agenda.
Sorry, I was confused there, but yes, we're fine.
You know, I'm just trying to think this through, to just like you two are, that so we get orders that are filed, and we know what the company's order is going to say. We know what it's going to say. They made their case, it'll reflect that. We know what the advocacy staff's order is going to say. Mm-hmm. We're still going to have to sit down and hammer through an order that'll tweak one of them or both of them, or maybe we just turn these guys loose and put an order together right now with the commonality. I don't know the best way of time, but there's a lot of work to be done still. We're still pretty hung up here with this late in the game. Because I've lived those other two NOVs, and they were...
Well, I think it's pretty clear what we should do, but...
Well, right, but then what it'll be an order and a counter order and votes coming out is what I'm seeing here. I don't see a 3-0 path any way forward right now. So I'm just saying that there's a lot of stuff that we got to get through. I don't know how that'll play out. There may be a path.
We may wind up with two orders.
Right, but that's a lot of work for these three over here, given that the time frame of so what I might do is maybe meet with Casey afterwards and give you my thoughts on what an order should look like, because I'm just saying that we're getting short on time. So.
Well, that's another way to approach it. I'm fine going forward and getting an order drafted, laying out what I've suggested as a fair path forward with a violation, no negligence, and a good faith bonus or whatever they're called.
And as far as the amount of work, of course, it's easy to talk about something as simple when someone else has to do it. But I don't know that from what I'm hearing of differences of opinion here, whether a couple different orders are going to be dramatically different. It sounds to me like it's a matter of whether it would be imposed and that's the end of it, or whether it would be suspended and potentially vacated if conditions are met. I don't really hear many other differences here.
The whole suspended thing, though, Rancher, I have a hard time with that. It just doesn't feel right. The suspense, either we vacate it or we don't. And if we don't vacate it, then I think Commissioner Fedorchak is right on the mark. So to me, I'm stuck in one of those two camps, unless there's something overwhelmingly. But this whole suspending, I think it creates a, I'd have to be proven otherwise, it doesn't create a legal nightmare that I don't want to go down.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see what's happening around the country, whether it's just something that North Dakota has never done, but others are doing it, or if it's never been tried before in this surface mining realm.
I'm still beating a dead horse, though, but if we vote to suspend it, let's say, what's the grounds to not to vacate it later? That's the issue, that if it comes out, then you tell me what's the grounds then.
Right, well, that's exactly it.
It didn't happen. It's no longer a violation. To me, that's just awkward.
Well, it's not saying that there's technically not, because you can have good cause, like a staff can have good cause to go out and issue a violation, but then the commission in that same sense can find that there's good cause to vacate it, not saying that that event didn't occur. But
why would you wait a year to do that?
That's the question to you.
Fair enough.
And the answer would be to entice extra special effort.
Which they should be doing already.
You know,
I hear you.
Everything was within limits. I mean, if...
Yeah. What about the point that Bindy puts our inspectors in with an NOV hanging over everybody's head?
I heard the answer. I don't see what the difference is, whether there's an NOV occurs. I'm confident in our people that doesn't mean they're running out there saying nan, and you know, we got you guys on something. That has occurred, and now they go back out and do their jobs just like they would have otherwise.
I think
I'm not really seeing what this has to do with whether there's an erosion spot somewhere else or weeds somewhere else or any other violation that may or may not be occurring.
Just in all fairness, it may be important to kind of consider some other factors if you did suspend the violation, then say an additional NOV is issued, but it's completely unrelated to, you know, erosion. I mean, you would very specifically have to lay out what NOVs count, what NOVs don't. Is this specific to this area? Is it site wide? It starts to bring up all those additional questions. So that's just an important consideration as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I'm envisioning is erosion issues of this creek. Not that a topsoil pile was blowing on a dry, windy day or something like that. I'm talking about controlling this creek erosion.
With the way we calculate history of violations, would this be a violation or not if they got an NOV in some other area?
Not after it was vacated.
But within the year, then it is.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's all I have, and I'll get that added to the agenda for the 28th.
Okay, very good.
We should try to schedule something between. We would potentially schedule something between now and when the orders come final or right away afterwards. Or if Guy and Casey and Francisco find some information out on the questions, it'd be nice to get that as soon as we can.
So we need a work session the week of the 21st.
For sure.
And I think we've established that we're pretty much gone the first 3 days, one of us. So we've got the 24th or 25th. Well, I'm here the 21st.
I'm not here the 21st. I am here the 23rd.
I'm here the 23rd as well.
And I'm not. I'm gone the 22nd and
23rd. Okay. Well, the 24th? Got a rail update at 10. That's all I'm showing.
11? Just go straight into that.
How long do you think it'll be with the UGPTI guys? Because they're going
to
give us...
You've talked to them more than I have on that, actually.
I think we just tell them an hour. That's what they'll... Okay. They just want to talk about ways they can help us.
Good. I like that. I think an hour is good.
Sounds good.
That's what we have scheduled already, so... 11 o'clock on the 24th.
Better when you're here, by the way.
I'm sorry?
Better when you're here.
Yes.
Good excuse to go to Broadway Grill.
I know.
Okay, 24th at 11 a.m. work session. Will be scheduled. And by then, we will have had the draft orders and any other potential draft orders to consider. Okay. And then we've got until that following Monday is all to finalize it. Okay. Anything else, Brandy?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Then that concludes work session on RC-15-495.